This is the Adventist World Radio, and you are listening to The Voice of Hope. For more information, please feel free to write to us. Our email address is bible@awr.org, or you could also call us on WhatsApp at +1-224-222-0777.
Hello and welcome to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Dr. Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson and produced in the studios of WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. I'm Jeff White. This is edition NWS 785 for release on Sunday, March 10th, 2024. On WaveScan today, Radio in Libya, Part 1, the BFBS and AFRTS stations, a profile of Guam shortwave broadcaster KTWR, and a popular Indian shortwave radio host passes on. Well, 13 years ago in 2011, one country that was very much in the news amid political turmoil and vicious fighting was the Arab Islamic State of Libya. 80 years ago, the same area featured prominently in the seesaw battles fought by the European powers during their North Africa campaigns. This week, Ray Robinson begins a three-part series on the history of radio broadcasting in Libya, starting with the earliest wireless stations and some radio broadcast stations that were operated by British and American personnel from shortly after the Second World War up until 1970. Here's Ray.
Thanks, Jeff. The country of Libya is located in North Africa, approximately in the middle of the Mediterranean coastline. Libya is about 1,000 miles north-south and also 1,000 miles east-west, although with an irregular shape. Almost the entire country is covered by the Sahara Desert, with a 50-mile strip of arable land along the coast and a few oases inland. The hottest temperature ever recorded on Earth occurred in Libya on September 13, 1922, when the temperature was measured at 136 degrees Fahrenheit, 58 Celsius. The current population of Libya is around 7.2 million and the capital city is Tripoli, although the largest city is Benghazi. Oil was discovered in quantity in 1959, and these days the sale of oil forms 80% of the national economy. This area of North Africa was inhabited by Berber tribes people in earliest ancient times, and Phoenicians from the Palestine coast settled in the area around 700 BC. 100 years later, the Greeks colonized the area, followed by the Romans, who in turn were followed by the Vandals from Central Europe, and then the Arabs came in around the 600s AD. In 1912, Italy took over Libya, and after World War II, Libya formally gained independence in 1951. For those who have an interest in biblical backgrounds, the original Berber tribes people are descended from Noah's son Ham, and Libya is mentioned by name in the Bible more than a dozen times. The early Christian church remembered that a man by the name of Simon from Cyrene in northeastern Libya was arrested by Roman soldiers and was forced to carry the cross along the Via Dolorosa in Jerusalem on behalf of the Messiah. Wireless communication came quite early to Libya, and the first stations were installed immediately after the end of World War I. These early wireless stations were located in Tripoli as ICK, in Benghazi as ICJ, and Tobruk as ICU, together with four other regional locations. However, radio broadcasting came quite late to Libya, and interestingly, the first medium wave stations weren't installed until after the Second World War, and were operated by British and American forces personnel, not by the national government or commercial interests. According to all available references, there was a total of six different BFBS stations on the air in Libya, giving coverage to four different localities on AM, FM and shortwave, and just one AFRTS station on AM medium wave. We look first at the British stations. According to Doreen Taylor in her book A Microphone and a Frequency, the first two British stations were erected somewhat simultaneously during the year 1946 in Benghazi and Tripoli. Both stations were quite small to begin with, using whatever electronic equipment was available. The original station in Benghazi was located on what had been the Italian airfield, and quite soon, in 1947, an attempt was made to broadcast on shortwave. The transmitter was an American-made RCA unit rated at 7.5 kilowatts, and the chosen channel was announced as 11820 kHz, though monitoring observations in Australia stated that the channel was more like 11850 kHz. Unfortunately, these BFBS shortwave broadcasts caused interference to a regular BBC transmission, so the first attempt at shortwave broadcasting was aborted. However, shortwave broadcasting was again attempted on two subsequent occasions, in 1949 on 4780 kHz and in 1956 with 7.5 kilowatts on 4930 and 7220 kilohertz. 2 years after the station was inaugurated, Arabic programming was introduced for the benefit of local citizens. 4 years after that, the station was flooded following heavy rains in the hills nearby. However, due to quick action on the part of the station personnel, very little damage was done to the station equipment. The Benghazi station was closed in February 1958, but upon the insistence of King Idris, a smaller station was reopened in 1960 with 1 kilowatt on 833 kHz, installed in an empty ward in what had been the base hospital in Wavell Barracks. Later in the 60s, a 4 kilowatt FM transmitter was added on 97.8 MHz. But when most of the British forces left the area, the station was taken over temporarily by signals personnel and soon afterwards it was closed. The last listing for the station in the World Radio TV Handbook is in 1968. The BFBS station in Tripoli likewise had a double life. It was located initially in the British Army barracks at Mareth, and 10 years later the station was transferred to Miani barracks 4 miles away. Likewise, shortwave coverage was tried from this station, and it was noted in England on 4785 kHz in 1953. This station, with 1 kilowatt on 1394 kHz, was finally closed in January 1966. A third BFBS station located at Tobruk came on the radio scene considerably later than the previous two. It was inaugurated in July 1964 and radiated 1 kilowatt on two channels, 1439 and 1484 kilohertz, that's 208 and 202 meters, as well as on 89 megahertz FM. And interestingly, the programming from the Tobruk BFBS station was also relayed over an FM transmitter on 90.2 MHz at El Adam, 17 miles inland, which received its program feed via a landline connection. The Tobruk station was closed after 6 years of service in 1970. BFBS in Libya was therefore on the air on shortwave from two different locations, Benghazi in 1947, 49 and 56, and from Tripoli in 1953. And yes, these BFBS stations in Libya did issue QSL cards, though these days they're quite rare. Dr. Adrian Peterson's Heritage Collection does contain one such card, verifying BFBS Benghazi on shortwave with 4 kilowatts on 3305 kHz in 1954. From 1943 to 1970, the United States Air Force operated the Huilas Air Base on the coast near Tripoli, a facility that had originally been constructed by the Italian Royal Air Force in 1923. On the base, there was an American AFRTS station, both radio and TV, and it appears from listings in the World Radio TV Handbook that the radio station was first launched in 1954, with 100 watts on 1510 kHz. The TV station was added early in 1955. Very little is known about either station. They must have had American call signs, but what they were, we don't know. When they were closed in 1970, the radio station was operating with 1 kilowatt on 1594 kilohertz. The significance of the closure in 1970 of both BFBS Tobruk and AFRTS Tripoli is that it was on September 1, 1969, that King Idris I was overthrown by Muammar Gaddafi in a successful military coup d'etat. Before the revolution, the US and Libya had already reached agreement on US withdrawal from Huilas. This proceeded according to plan, and the facility was turned over to the new Libyan authorities on the 11th of June 1970. Well, next week we'll take a look at the domestic governmental radio operations in Libya on both medium wave and short wave. Back to you, Jeff.
Thanks, Ray, for part one of your series on Libyan radio. On February 29th, the American publication Radio World published a profile of shortwave station KTWR, the trans-world radio station in Guam. KTWR is one of two shortwave stations in Guam, the other being KSDA, the Adventist World Radio Station, which transmits this program, Wavescan. Here's a portion of the KTWR article by L. Karas. Broadcasting since 1954, Transworld Radio, or TWR, is a Christian nonprofit organization that collaborates with radio stations to spread the gospel via local FMs, medium wave or high powered AMs, and shortwave transmitters. TWR's programming is broadcast in 200 plus languages on air, online, and on the ground in 190 countries. It celebrated its 70th anniversary in February. With such an extensive resume, TWR was bound to have at least a few unique transmitter sites. One such site can be found where America's Day begins, floating just above the equator in the western Pacific Ocean. In Micronesia, TWR's shortwave on Guam, KTWR, serves listeners across most of Asia, spanning Siberia to India to Indonesia. The KTWR site has three transmitters, one 100 kilowatt and two 250 kilowatts. The six TCI curtain antennas were installed during various years from 1977 to 1998. TWR installed the antennas and transmitters with its own personnel and volunteers. Mike Sabin, the Asia Broadcast Technical Operations Director for TWR, said the KTWR site has three solar arrays with a total power capacity of 87 kilowatts. The broadcast site sits in Maleso, Guam's southernmost village. Maleso skirts the island's southern shoreline on a long strip of land between mountains and sea, which provides interesting broadcast capabilities. Being on the foot of a mountain and close to the ocean has helped the broadcasts be easily heard all over Asia, said Sabin. Now, the location of the pristine site hasn't been without its challenges. The island of Guam, a U.S. territory since 1898, is no stranger to natural disasters and inclement weather. Recently, in 2023, Typhoon Mawar brought widespread flooding and 140-mile-per-hour winds, equivalent to a Category 4 hurricane, when it struck on May 24th last year, wreaking a whopping $112 million in damage. Mawar is recorded as the strongest typhoon to hit the territory since 2002. KTWR was not immune to Mawar's harsh winds, but did fare a little better than expected, according to Sabin. All of the antennas had varying amounts of damage, but the buildings and the transmitters fared well, he said. One antenna was a complete loss, but the towers were all fine. Since the typhoon made landfall last May, Mike Sabin said a new TCI 611 curtain antenna has been purchased and will be installed this spring. After nearly 2 months of disrupted programming, the shortwave station resumed its regular on-air schedule on July 15th. Prior to that, three other shortwave broadcasters in Asia aired some of KTWR's usual programming while the team on Guam repaired the wrecked antennas. Sabin's remarks on KTWR's recovery last July serve as a strong reminder for stations to take emergency preparedness seriously and to expect the unexpected. While we do keep an updated contingency plan for broadcast coverage, every catastrophic event we have had over the past two decades has proven to be unique, Sabin told Radio World. This particular event, unfortunately, took the prize for the longest complete outage at KTWR ever.
KTWR, Agonya, Guam. You're tuned to 15110 kHz at 19 meter band. Air programs can be heard every day at 1500 coordinated universal time. Please stay tuned for our next program.
This is life-changing radio. From KTWR, Aganya, Guam, we are Trans World Radio.
From Guam to India now. Josh Jacob sent us an article from the Times of India about the recent death of a famous shortwave radio announcer in India, although he broadcast from Ceylon, now Sri Lanka. The article by Avijit Ghosh reads in part, Amin Sayala, the iconic host of the Binaka Gitmala program on Radio Ceylon, has passed away at the age of 91. His show revolutionized Indian broadcasting, nurturing a special bond with listeners. Prime Minister Narendra Modi paid tribute to his contribution and charismatic voice. His voice was his face. Everyone recognized it. Millions would tune in to Radio Ceylon every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Binaka Gitmala wasn't just a blockbuster radio program. It was a social glue, an audio addiction. Mumbai-based radio personality Amin Sayani hosted the hit parade of film songs from 1952 to 1994. From the 1950s to the 1970s, radio ruled indoor entertainment in India. With a voice that seemed to be shaking hands and a style that was intimate, Sayani not only personified the golden years of radio, but also shaped and expanded it. At a time when songs sold films, it spawned hundreds of listener clubs. Overcoming the faint and wavering sound of shortwave radio, hundreds would press their ears to the transistor to engage with a weekly register of songs. The program's emotional bonding with the listener is hard to explain and impossible to replicate. Binaka Gitmala was born at a time when Hindi songs were banned on All India Radio. Radio Ceylon grabbed the opportunity. Within a few months, Sayani said AIR lost a major chunk of its popular listenership. At its peak, the show received 65,000 letters a week. And here's a recording of the opening of one of Sayani's shows from 1989.
नमस्ते बहनों और भाइयों, आपका दोस्त अमीन सयानी बिनाका गीतमाला वॉल्यूम नंबर 23 के साथ हाजिर है। आज के इस कार्यक्रम में सबसे पहले हम सब मिलकर नए साल का हार्दिक स्वागत करते हैं।
Amin Sayani, a popular shortwave voice from Radio Ceylon, for 41 years.
Hello everyone, their dear shortwave listeners, wherever you are. Welcome to the March 10th edition of the Philippine DX. This is report number 204. I'm Henry Umaday in Bacolod City, Negros Occidental Central Philippines. Glad to be back and thank you for listening. I would like to thank the following DXers for sending the reception report most recently. Mr. Jan Zachary Alvarez in Cavite here in the Philippines, Mr. Richard Lemke in Alberta, Canada, and Mr. Marco Lasatin in San Fernando, Pampanga, here also in the Philippines. To all of you, thank you very much. Reception logs for February 2024. February 4, BBC World Service on 9580 in English from Tinang at 1000 SIO 333. February 4, Radio Free Asia on 17730 in Tibetan from Tinian Island at 1013 SIO 433. February 4, China Radio International on 15440 in Cantonese from Kunming Aning at 1026 SIO 444. February 4, Radio Taiwan International on 11915 in Indonesian from Pao Chong at 1031 SIO 444. February 11, Transworld Radio KTWR on 11965 in Indonesian, from Arezzo, Guam at 1032 SIO 555. February 11, Radio Taiwan International on 12065 in Hakka, from Pauchong at 10:34 SAO 555, February 18 KCBS Pyongyang on 11:680 in Korean from Kangchi at 11:12 SAO 444, February 18 Adventist World Radio on 11:690 in Chinese from Agat Guam at 11:14 SAO 444, February 18 Voice of America on 15:150 in Chinese from Odontani at 11:20 SAO 333, February 25 Adventist World Radio on 15:500 in Indonesian from Agat Guam at 11:22 SAO 444, February 25 Adventist World Radio on 15:530 in Siangaan from Agat Guam at 11:41 SAO 555, February 25 China Radio International on 11:955 in Filipino from Kunming Aning at 11:43 SAO 444, and February 25 PBS Shenyang China National Radio 1 on 11:770 in Chinese from Urumqi at 11:45 SAO 555. Send us your comments, suggestions, reception lags, and informations to PilipinasDX@gmail.com. That's PilipinasDX for PilipinasDX@gmail.com. This has been Henry Umalay for Wavescan in Bacolod City, Negros Occidental Central, Philippines. Sa mabuhay at maraming salamat po.
World Radio Day 2024 celebrates the enduring legacy of a timeless communications medium. Along with a remarkable past and dynamic present, radio promises a future filled with astonishing innovations. Today, broadcast radio remains one of the most lively communications media available, disseminating information, entertainment, and educational material to vast audiences in countries worldwide. As we enter the second century of radio broadcasting, the medium continues evolving. The transition to digital broadcasting and the rise of podcasting have democratized the creation and distribution of audio content, allowing a diverse array of voices to find resonance in the global soundscape. In recent decades, broadcast radio stations have become a crucial component of the public safety net too. During emergencies, the portability of radio receivers and wide reach of radio broadcasts can disseminate early warnings before and support emergency response and recovery during and after a disaster. Access to timely information can mean the difference between life and death. Radio equipment is readily available, reliable and resilient. Its relatively low cost and portability make it essential for emergency preparedness, response, and recovery. Hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, floods, and wildfires all disrupt communication. When power lines are cut or cell towers are destroyed, radio is at hand for broadcasting emergency alerts, coordinating evacuations, and providing real-time updates. Toelupe Pumulinuku Onesemo, Minister for Communications and Information Technology for Samoa, explains why it's important to protect radio frequencies for emergency services.
We need protections around the C-band and those part of the spectrum in which we're utilizing for our emergency services, and also around our Pacific island, isolated islands around the middle of the ocean. There's a need for protections around those part of the spectrum, you know, not only for our navigations, but also for emergency responses.
In small island developing or SID states, radio is the best and sometimes only link between remote, hard-to-reach communities.
We need to consider SID states that need this part of the spectrum for their livelihoods and also for security and protection, but also in terms of emergencies.
And it's not just the bands used for early warnings and disaster recovery that strengthen resilience, Mario Manovich explains.
We always have the amateur bands that we cherish, you know, as an historic service, but also one that today is very useful when there is an emergency, when there is a natural disaster or a man-made disaster. So amateur radio amateurs are always ready to help. And sometimes when the infrastructure, communications infrastructure goes down, they are the only ones that that remain there to help people.
Timothy Ellen, president of the International Amateur Radio Union, says there's a large community of amateur radio operators ready to lend a hand in emergencies.
During times of crisis, disasters, the commercial communications infrastructure often goes down, and you have to fall back on other services, and the amateur radio operators are perfectly poised to deal with communication in emergent systems. And there's been very many examples I could give you during typhoons or hurricanes where the commercial systems have collapsed, and for the short period before you can get other services up and running, amateur radio operators are there on the ground, they have their own equipment, they know what antennas and frequencies to use that are allocated to us in order to get vital information back to the emergency services.
Protecting radio frequencies can help to save lives and mitigate the impact of disasters worldwide. Now, and into the future. You've been listening to an ITU podcast for World Radio Day, produced and presented by me, Maximilian Jacobson Gonzalez, written by Jennifer McLeod, studio recording by Daniel Walden.
And we end WaveScan today with traditional Maalouf music from Libya. Thanks for listening to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson. Next week, we'll have part two of Radio in Libya, exploring medium wave and shortwave. Kim Elliott tells us why we need shortwave 2.0, and a DX report as well. WaveScan is heard weekly on KSDA in Guam, AWR relays in various locations, WRMI in Florida, WWCR in Tennessee, Voice of Hope Africa in Zambia, and IRRS Italy. Send reception reports directly to the station you're listening to. Reports for KSDA and other AWR sites should go to qsl@awr.org. Other correspondence, not reception reports, can be sent to wavescan@awr.org. I'm Jeff White at WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. Till next week, good listening, everyone.
Adventist World Radio, and you are listening to The Voice of Hope. For more information, please feel free to write to us. Our email address is bible@awr.org, or you could also call us on WhatsApp at +1 224 222 0777.